Hi, welcome to The Left Brain Artist. I'm Suzanne Redman. If you've ever considered writing a book about your art, this is the interview for you. I'm talking with Tanya Jenny, who has edited and acquired dozens of art and craft books. She has spent a career working with artists, first by helping them to enhance their art through framing, and later by helping them create and design their books. She was also instrumental in the introduction of mixed media art to the world. I heard of Tanya years ago when my friend Beverly Gilbert told me about her experience getting her book Beaded Colorways developed through Tanya and Northlight Books. I've since realized that Tanya either acquired or edited quite a few art books that I own. I'm a book hound, and I grew up in a house with thousands of books. My art book collection is only around 100, but I'm sure Tanya had her hands on quite a few of them. As I've done these interviews, her name has come up more than once when artists are talking about their books. So I thought, let's give her a call and see what she's up to. She calls Phoenix, Arizona home, and that's where she's established a business where she provides editorial services, coaching, and online art courses. This is Tanya Jenny. Hi, Tanya. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi. Excited to be here. Thank you.
This is great. I've known Tanya's name for a while because she's worked in the publishing industry and has been one of the names behind many of the books that I own from some really talented artists. So I want to hear about Tanya's business, what she's doing now, but let's start at the beginning. How did you get into writing and the book world, and how did you get into art? Let's hear about that.
Okay.
Well, I know that's a huge question.
But that's fine. Like many artists, I've been creative most of my life. I went to school to study graphic design. And when I got done with school, I wasn't really sure that that's the career path I wanted to follow. I'm sure this happens to other people as well.
Right.
So I took up actually picture framing for a while, and I loved it so much that I did it for maybe like 10 years before it was like, okay, I need a big girl job now. I couldn't really grow anymore from being a picture framer. So I asked myself, well, if I don't want to be a graphic designer and I don't want to have my own framing shop, what do I want to do? And I thought about how much I had enjoyed picture framing because it was taking art and, you know, presenting it differently, right? I was sort of, I was really creating a new piece of art from a simpler piece of art.
Oh, I love that. I love how you've looked at that. That's great.
Yeah. And I thought about, I somehow made this correlation with craft books. You know, I was a craft book junkie, like many of us are, before I ever even started working on books. And it kind of dawned on me that building a book is very similar to framing a picture. You know, I'm not doing the original content, just like maybe I'm not doing the original art, but I'm still transforming it into something, you know, a package. You know, I'm presenting it like in its best light. And I'd always had an aptitude for writing and editing. It's just not what I formally went to school for. So I didn't really know if I could be an editor or not, but I started seeing ads in my local paper. I was living in Ohio at the time, in the Cincinnati area, and I started seeing ads in the paper that Northlight Books was looking for an associate editor to work on their craft books. And
that's great.
Yeah. So long story short, I applied there for, oh gosh, I must have sent in like 3 or 4 resumes and never got any response from HR. And finally, I was so determined that I created a creative resume. I think it was a box of like Girl Scout merit badges, but you know, based on my experience, you know, what I thought I had to be an editor.
That's great.
And that got me an interview. So, you know, I had to take a few tests to make sure that I really could write and spell and that sort of thing.
Okay.
But they told me, you know, later that really, while that is certainly imperative, the thing that really sold them on it was my passion for creating things, you know, for the books themselves. That was really important to them. So So I was thrilled. I got the job within the first year that I worked there. I guess it was probably just after a year. I started doing what's called acquiring books. So I became an acquisition editor, which means I was the person to find new authors to do books. And at that time, they were just craft books. They weren't, I wasn't doing mixed media quite yet. It was jewelry, a lot of jewelry books, and decorative painting. You know, it's been like so long now, I can't even remember what all the categories were, but it didn't matter. Yeah, I loved it, all of it. So,
yeah, can you tell me what year we're talking about? Because when you say your task was to find artists, I'm guessing it's a little different than today when you can just look at Instagram and Pinterest and start following some really interesting artists.
It would have been about 2004 or 5.
Okay.
So, yes, there was no social media. There was certainly people had blogs, that I could Google, you know, information about that.
Okay.
And events would often have websites, events such as the larger art retreats, they would have websites that had information. Of course, it was not as sophisticated as it is now, but yeah. So anyway.
So that was your starting point. Okay.
Yeah. So I would, you know, a lot of, what I went on at first was just from the blogs that I did follow. That was sort of the first people that I, you know, that I knew about, I guess.
Okay. You know what? Blogs get so, they get a bad name right now. And I think it's really just the word, because so many people have a blog component of their website, but they call it news or, you know, the latest happenings or stories or something. But with the interviews that I've done with artists, so many people praise their blogs as a starting point for their careers because they were able to look at other artists and see what they do and look and see, well, where are they teaching? Where are they going to retreats? And that, and then they use, of course, they use their blog as a history for when they start making classes because they had so many blog posts about different subject areas. So I'm an advocate for blogs, whether you call it that or not, because I see what it's done for all these artists' careers. It's been wonderful. Anyway, I just wanted to say that. So go on.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. That is where just about everybody started, I think.
Yeah.
So I acquired general craft books for probably about another year. And then my team, you know, we would have weekly meetings discussing what type of books we wanted to acquire, you know, what types of crafts we wanted, we thought would be a good book, who, if anybody we knew, could do them. And my, you know, I had been subscribe to Somerset Studio for a while. And that's also where I found a lot of artists. And I just remember, loving that type of art so much. It didn't have as much of a common label as mixed media as it does now. You know, it was, a lot of it was, I think, considered the paper arts.
Yes.
You know, around the time of scrapbooking getting its big start
and rubber stamping.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So there really wasn't quite a name for it yet, but it was in our collective consciousness, right? We kind of all were starting to see it and get excited about it and the materials, and it was so different because it was mixed media. It wasn't just, you know, painting. It was painting with other stuff. And I was really intrigued by that. And so, you know, I didn't really know what category to put it into, but I knew that I wanted that type of art as a possibility for these books. But yet, you know, is it really craft? Well, you know, so I kept bringing it up and bringing it up, and they would, you know, look at what I, you know, examples that I brought and things like that. And eventually they decided that maybe, yeah, they thought it was probably a good idea too, because I'm sure they were seeing it, you know, here and there as well. And so we decided, okay, let's try it. Let's, you know, let's acquire a few and see how they do. And kind of the rest is history. It took off, you know, it did well. I seem to have a good radar for that, you know, for that type of thing. I have a very, discerning personality. So I can really pick out I have a knack for being able to tell what a lot of people will like. It's not necessarily, you know, what's always some people might consider good or bad. It's just kind of, I have a good sense of what, you know, a good large general consensus might be. So.
And that's why you were a success.
Yeah. So it was great. You know, it was fun. I mean, I worked at that job for, I think it's 13 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
During that time, I worked with, you know, many, many, artists, and every single, artist that I got to work with, I didn't get to edit every book that I acquired because I had to acquire more than I could physically work on. So I only got to probably work on maybe, I don't know, I'm totally guessing half or probably less of the books by the time I left there that I was acquiring. So.
Okay. All right. Can I ask you to define the word acquiring? So were you proposing to an artist, hey, do you want to write a book? Or had they already come to you and said, hey,
good,
I want to write a
question.
Book?
Yes. Very good question. Yeah. So in the beginning, because there weren't a lot of these sorts of books, the publisher was not getting query letters or pitches for this type of thing.
Okay.
It was all me, emailing people. In fact, Kelly Ray Roberts was one of the earlier people that I emailed saying, hey, this might sound kind of crazy, but I follow, you know, your blog, and I just think that what you had to offer would make a really cool book. You know, what do you think? And early on, I don't remember exactly how soon she replied, but I know in general, a lot of people, it was too far-fetched for them. They either thought it was like scam or, you know, and so like I would never hear from them for like months or sometimes a year, you know, and then they'd maybe see somebody else was doing something. So they'd be like, oh my gosh, Tanya, I'm so embarrassed. You know, I think you contacted me months ago and I'm just now getting to it, or, you know, or I didn't think it was legitimate, or, you know, whatever. So early on, it was all me reaching out to people. About 3 or 4 years into it, it started, you know, queries started coming in, and I had to start, you know, I had to get very good at turning people down, which I hated. That was like my least part of the job was rejection.
I bet.
But, you know, that's also something that I'm very good at. I like to still point out, you know, the possibilities that they might have, other options that they might be able to take. And, but still it was no fun. So
I bet.
A little combination of both of those. And,
okay.
And then, were you going to ask something?
Well, I was going to tell you that, my interview this week was with Jody Ohl, and she did the Abstracts in Acrylic and Ink book. Mm-hmm. And she tells a funny story on the interview about going to Cincinnati and bringing all her paintings, everything, so that you could take the photographs of her work. And she made such large paintings, she brought a U-Haul.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And she said it was just crazy showing up with a U-Haul and having to ask whoever happened to be in the office to help her unload this U-Haul. And she realized later, I didn't have to make such big paintings. I could have made 12 by 12s and they would have been fine. But then I've also interviewed Beverly Gilbert, and she did Beaded Colorways with you. And I met her years ago, and she told me the story about going to Cincinnati to take the photographs of her book, or the processes within her book. And it was in the middle of a snowstorm. And she said it was just crazy getting there. And that sticks in my mind. And I think that's the first time I heard of your name was when Beverly was telling me that story.
That jogs my memory too. I was not the actual editor for Beverly or Jody. I acquired their books, but I didn't get the privilege of working on them. Unfortunately, I really wanted to work with both of them because I love both of them. But just as far a note on the photo shoots, it really is quite an experience, and it was my favorite part of the job for, you know, the books that I did get to work on. When I had an author come in for a photo shoot, it was my own private workshop, you know, it was my own personal workshop for a whole week. You know, I got to see, you know, firsthand, of course, what they were doing. It was important that I understood it so that I could edit the book accurately. And I got to spend time with them and get to know them a little bit. It was just, it was by far my favorite part of the job, the photo shoots. Yeah. So those are a lot of fun.
Wonderful.
They're fun for the authors. Everyone is always so nervous about coming in, which is understandable. It's not something
right.
you do every day. It's, you don't know what to expect, but the photographer that we had there at the time was just amazing and just such a super sweet, beautiful person, Christine Polomsky. And she always made everybody feel right at home and like they were very efficient and, you know, doing everything correctly. And so she put people at ease right away. And it was always a great fun week. And we were always sorry to part ways and have people go home.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Yeah. But that's nice. That's definitely important to put them at ease. Yeah. So when you did Kelly Ray Roberts' book, did this happen to be Taking Flight? Was
yes.
that her book?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I have that book. Did that one did you edit and do the work on the book with her?
I did not. No, she had an
no, okay.
editor. Uh-huh.
Okay. What is the difference? What are all the tasks that you do when you were editing and working on the books that way?
So to edit the book, the first thing you have to do is prepare the author to come in for the photo shoot. So we have to make sure that we're both in agreement with what the outline of the book is going to be. And in that outline, which things are going to need to be shown at the photo shoot, which is most of it. And then we kind of want to get a sense of, you know, are there things that need to be prepped ahead of time so that it takes less time? You know, nobody's used to working, you know, we work organically when we're working on stuff, right? We work on it a little bit, we walk away and let it dry and we cook dinner or do something else. And
right.
you know, we don't just sit down and make something start to finish, you know, for 5 days in a row. So it takes, you know, some thinking kind of, that's kind of where the left brain part comes in, right? It's,
right.
it's organizing what you're doing and looking at it from a, you know, a more distant perspective. And after the photo shoot is done, and the author goes home, the editor, and the photographer organize all the photos and make them available to the author so that they can write all the captions for the book according to the actual photos.
Okay.
So, you know, lots of times you can come in, you can be an author artist coming in for a photo shoot and having one idea of what the actual photos are going to be. But then, the editor maybe has a different idea. And so you can't, it's really difficult to say write the captions all ahead of time because you don't know what actually is going to be in the photos yet. So there's a lot of work they can do up front. They can write the book intro text if they want, the chapter intro text, that kind of thing. But it really is much easier to do most of the book after you get the photos back. So, so that's done. Then after the artist has all the photos, they have, it was roughly usually around 3 months. It varied, but usually around 3 months to then write all the book and get it to the editor. The editor would do an initial edit of the book and would send it to a copy editor to really get all the major errors out of there. And then after that, the author would see it. It wasn't designed yet. It was just edited for content. So the author got to make sure that we didn't take out anything important or, you know, put in anything that was inaccurate. And from there, it went to a designer, book designer, and the designer created, a unique design for the book. One thing that the books that we published were really well known for. Well, two things really. One was the amount of step-by-step photos. Lots of other publishers would have all the written instruction, but not as much step-by-step photo detail. And then the other thing was just the design was really reflective of the artist's style. So we wanted it to sort of look like the artist was the designer, even though, in all honesty, very, very few artists are designers. It's not one skill.
Okay.
A lot of us think that it is. So
right.
you know, there's really not too many authors who really could design their own book, even though many actually wanted to or would want to. So the designer
right.
talked with the artist when they were in town, just kind of try and get to know them a little bit. They'd spend time looking on their blog, you know, looking at their work, trying to get a sense of what made their look unique to them. So they would design it. It would come back to the editor, who would then also send it to the author again for a final look at it. So the editor and the author are kind of looking at it at the same time, along with a proofreader and an indexer creating an index for the book. So in those last couple weeks, there's, you know, four people looking at the book at one time. After the author sends their corrections back and the editor inputs what is it, whatever's appropriate, then it goes to a final edit, which is usually the managing editor. Sometimes it's another editor. And then it goes off to the printer. The entire process from kind of like signing the contract to when the book actually shows up is usually about a year. Sometimes it's longer, and occasionally it's a little shorter, but it's difficult to get it in less than 9 months. There has to really be a lot of stuff done up front for that to happen.
Okay. All right. Well, that was a great explanation for it. When they do a query letter, have they already come up with all of the chapter headings and they're proposing exactly what's going to be in it?
That's another very good question. In my experience there, in those 13 years I was doing it, there was probably only maybe less than 10% of the artists who had the book all done. You know, so they had, it was just an idea. They weren't like saying, hey, I've written this book. What do you think of it? And I would say probably only 20-25% maybe had sort of what you were saying, an idea of what the chapters would be, you know, what the outline of the book would be. That's kind of, I think, a misconception that a lot of people have, is that they need to have all that figured out before pitching an idea to a publisher. In fact, and maybe some publishers like that, but personally, I kind of liked to help coach them on that, because again, I knew what kind of, you know, content would probably have the best reception. And so it was just as easy for us to work on it together as it was for them to have that all figured out ahead of time.
I gotcha. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you worked for 13 years at North Light, and you worked with so many different artists. Let me just make this personal right now. Can you tell me, what is your favorite type of art? What, you must have been exposed to art that you'd never seen before. So what was your favorite coming out of this?
Well, I'm one of those, I think sometimes I call them Renaissance souls, that this is, or maybe artistic OCD is another word for it, but that's not as politically correct. So I should
say
that.
I like Renaissance soul.
But, you know, honestly, I love learning new things. I don't like any just one type of art, and I'm still that way. I was that way then. I would say right now, my favorite thing is watercolor. I just really love watercolor. I've been doing that for a couple of years now, and I don't plan on stopping it anytime soon. I've never really gotten into acrylic painting. I have done it on and off, and for a while I really loved creating painted canvases to then, you know, cut up and sew into bags. So I would sell those for a while, you know, tote bags and clutches things. Yeah, from painted canvas. In fact, I think I may have originally got that idea from Alyssa Burke.
She had a book. It was called Canvas Magic, I think.
Canvas Remix, maybe?
Canvas Remix. That's what it was.
Yeah. I was really inspired by her and her ideas of transforming, or making practical art, basically. Taking art and being able to put it, you know, onto other surfaces and things. I was excited about that.
I'm still inspired by her. She's amazing.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So yeah, but other than that, I didn't really ever get into acrylic painting. I really love more craft things. I'm currently making candles from cement. I'm pouring my own forms. I love jewelry. I love bead weaving.
Nice.
Yeah, that type of thing. But I don't really have a favorite type.
Well, I think I match that, in that I'm quite the OCD-ish Renaissance soul. Mm-hmm. I go from so many different things, but you know, I love looking at the books and getting inspired by them. I've got a bookcase full of art books that are just so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it sounds like you have taken what started as a graphic design background and gone into the picture framing and then gone into the book world. And now you've got your own business and your own website where you're helping people in the way that you've really been doing all along, helping them create their stories and their brand. So tell me about your own website and what you're doing with that now. By the way, when did you launch your own website?
It's been about a year, almost a year and a half, not quite. It was, okay. June or July, of not this last one. So 17, I guess, 2017.
Okay.
Yeah. And I, just like with the art, I like, I have several arms of my business to what I'm doing. The thing that I'm probably most connected with is the editing. So I provide editorial services for creatives because that is my background. That is my area of expertise. I help people either put together a proposal to pitch to a publisher, but I also help people self-publish. So if people have a book idea and they have absolutely no idea how to go about it, and they don't want it to look like a self-published book, they want it to look like the equivalent of, you know, say a Northlight book.
Right.
I can help them do that. I can, you know, I can edit it for them so it's a quality book. And I also do the graphic design part. So I can do
that's great.
The whole thing.
Oh, that's wonderful. I've been amazed at how self-published books do not look like, I don't know what I imagine they would look like, but, you know, they're sold on Amazon just like published books. Mm-hmm. They look just like the other ones, very highly polished. So it's very impressive to me, the self-publishing world. In your opinion, are there pros and cons for one over the other?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. So to self-publish.
I know I opened up a can of worms
oh,
with that question.
That's okay. No, it's a good question. And it's something
yeah.
I'm sure lots of people would like to get some answers on. To have, to self-publish a book, you have to pay the costs. You know, you don't have to pay the production costs if you're doing print on demand, such as CreateSpace and Amazon, Ingram Spark and some others. If it's print on demand, it doesn't actually cost you anything to up or very little, depends on the platform, but it doesn't cost you much at all to upload your content and get the book published and available to be shipped to people.
Okay.
What costs the money is, say, like getting my help to do it because, you know, so you're
right.
paying me to make it pretty and polished. So if you are working with a publisher, you don't have to pay for that. That's, you know, the publisher is assuming that cost. So as far as those two production costs go, that's two differences. Then also,
okay.
So in terms of, let's see, I had a thought that was directly related to that. Yes. So when the publisher is the one publishing the book and they are the one paying, the money, not only to, the production costs, but the printing costs, which are, you know, quite large for the number of books that they want to print, they're going to be much more concerned about being the ones to make all the decisions for the book. They're not going to just let,
okay.
The author decide on the title of the book, you know, the design of the book, lots of things in general. The author really does not have the final say. That said, the publisher does want the author to like the book. It's in their best interest to have the author promote the book. So it's not like, you know, they still try and work together as a team to make the author, you know, happy, but it doesn't always work out. Sometimes the publisher, you know, puts their foot down and decides things about the book that the author wouldn't have necessarily thought was the best idea. So
okay.
You have more freedom of, you know, you get to be the one to make all the decisions if you're self-publishing. And then there's, so those are the two things so far. And
yep.
The third thing mm-hmm. I would say is the question of distribution. So if you are a publisher, you have more direct opportunity to get a book into booksellers' catalogs into their brick and mortar stores. You just have more reach as far as that goes, because you know a distributor and a reseller is going to trust the quality of the publisher more than they're just going to want to take anything from, you know, a self-publisher.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, mm-hmm. you know, distribution wise, you probably have a greater chance with a publisher. That said, you know, the publishers are relying more and more on the author being the one to really heavily promote their book. So in that respect, you know, if you're someone who is really good at selling your things and promoting yourself, you can do very well self-publishing, you know, yourself. There's a little bit of a myth, I think, that if you get something published by a publisher, that the publisher is going to take your book and advertise it everywhere and, you know, promote the socks off of it. And the simple fact of the matter is that the publisher has a limited marketing, publishing, or promoting budget. And so they pick certain titles from each season to give the most attention to. And that's why they're really relying on all the things that they're not spending a lot of money on to be, you know, promoted on their own. So
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like the artist that wants to write a book needs to already have a kind of a large reach out there. So they already need to have followers and people who know about them and ways that they can promote to those people, right?
This is going to sound really odd, but yes, if their primary motivation for publishing the book is to sell a lot of copies. So I've talked that sometimes about it, like in a blog post or two and on social media about, I believe there are many reasons for wanting to write and publish a book, and certainly making money and selling a lot of copies is a very legitimate and common reason, but it's not the only reason. So it just depends. If you say you want to have, maybe you don't have a huge following and you're not good at selling. If you do want to sell a lot of books, that's a problem. If you, have more of a motivation of wanting to, a lot of people now use their book sort of almost like a calling card. It's like a portfolio. Lots of times it's something that they can send to people to get other opportunities from.
Okay. Yes. I've seen that. I know what you're talking about. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's one motivation, for publishing a book. The other one, which is, much more altruistic, is just, to me, it's a way of sharing yourself with others. It's more almost like an act of service, and it's an opportunity for you to give of what you know you're good at to as many people as possible, more people than say you could just reach, in person, you know, or teaching workshops maybe.
Okay. Those are all great reasons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go back to, the things that you offer on your website. You don't just help people write books. What are some other things that you can do for them? You're helping them write all kinds of things in their brand.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe what else you do for people?
Absolutely. I can help them do certain types of copywriting, like help them polish the copy on their website. I actually sell a little writing kit that helps people write their own, like artist mission statement or bio, because everybody hates doing that. So I have a system that makes
that.
It less painful. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's quite affordable. This writing kit that you offer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll put links to all of these things on the show notes of this episode, because I saw that in particular and I thought, yes, that's what artists need.
Yeah. So I do that. I help them. I'm also a life purpose coach. I went to coaching school during my time working full time for the publisher.
Okay.
I did that on the side, and that's also something I'm really passionate about is life coaching. So I really enjoy, and I can certainly do that in the area of distilling book ideas and figuring out what the best book topic is. But I also just enjoy doing it around the topic of life purpose in general. So I offer that.
And so I've been talking mostly about, we've been talking about artists, but what other type of people would be your, that you can help in addition to the visual artists that we're talking about?
Primarily visual artists in terms of okay. books, but also just because I have a deep personal interest in, you know, spirituality and well-being, I seem to attract a lot of those types of topics as well. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And sometimes, a lot of times they overlap, you know, a lot of times
right.
there's multiple elements in, you know, as artists, we're very emotional feeling people. So lots of times there's aspects outside of art. It's more like, lifestyle aspects that we want to bring into our books. And, you know, that's something that, lots of times you have a hard time selling to a publisher because it's a little bit different. It's not as safe or, you know, that as many people are going to like that. So those types of books often are very accomplishable self-publishing because, of course, you can do, you know, whatever you want and they end up being really, you know, really cool books.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. But I mean, if you look back at your history and when you first started trying to explain to your coworkers the concept of mixed media, you know, that was probably a hard sell too.
Oh my goodness. And I have to tell you, and many of the artists I've worked with know this. And I don't know if anybody ever mentions it or not, but so many times the books that I, proposed were a tough sell for me. And, you know, I started getting a good enough reputation that the salespeople and all the people that made the decisions came to trust my judgment. But a lot of times, I'll mention earlier ones that, that were really sort of the pioneers in these sort of mixed media books that encompass more than just art are, Kelly Ray Roberts was actually one of them because her book wasn't just about making the art that she did. She, we didn't usually do multiple contributor books. So one, her book had multiple contributors, in it. And, you know,
actually quite common now.
It is a lot more common now. Yes. And
yeah.
It's actually getting, I think getting a little bit less common again, but that's a different.
Oh, okay.
but anyway, the other one, which actually happened to be a multi contributor book, but was quite different was, Sherry Gaynor's book called Creative Awakenings. Did you ever see that or?
Yes, I think I can picture what's on the cover. I think it's a girl with wings, butterfly wings or something.
She's like, it's like a red background. She has like on a blue dress and I think she's holding something up. Anyway,
it doesn't
matter. The point is, it's an awesome book and it's on, using visual journaling, which that's a sort of what broke open the mixed media category, right? Is visual journaling.
Right.
So it's one of the first visual journaling books that I acquired, but that also focuses on the law of attraction. You know, I don't know that she called it that in that book back then.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, so I was really a little nervous about, you know, bringing that sort of a, you know, hey, you know, artists are going to love this book to pitch to the publisher, but I just felt really good about it. And so, you know, they did it and it actually did very well. And, you know, it's older now and Sherry is republishing it herself. Now she has the rights to do that. So it's still in circulation. It's just not, published by the publisher anymore.
Oh,
so
okay.
that came up all the time. Like I just always, I loved like pushing the envelopes, you know, so to speak, and getting topics in there that were new, but, you know, were a little iffy sometimes, you know, not always just in a woo-woo kind of way, but just that were really different, you know, like crocheting with wire, you know, or.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yes. I was kind of used to, being prepared to have a good argument for the books that I pushed. And I think that's why I'm still good at helping people put proposals together because I know the concerns that the publisher is going to have and the evidence that they're going to want to see before, you know, agreeing to a book.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Yeah. And so that's very important. So it can get past that first stage of even being accepted. Okay. Now I'd like to talk about the online art classes that you have. You offer a couple of them on your website. So you're doing some art and you've put them into class format. How did that come about?
Thank you so much for asking, because I would have forgotten about that too. So basically the way that that came about is I have wanted to do online courses for years, and I just never quite had the right push to do it. Well, not too long ago, gosh, time flies. Maybe it's been 6 months or more now, but I don't really remember. I took a part-time job with Connie Solera of 21 Secrets, Dirty Footprint Studio.
Yeah.
Connie and I live in the same town, so it makes it actually really nice to work together. So I am her creative director and course manager. So I, similar to how I would find authors to do books, I help her find the artists to teach on her, for, you know, her platform, the 21 mm-hmm. Secrets books. And during one of the earlier editions that I worked on, I ended up needing to step in and be one of the artists in that edition. So I
came up with a
workshop that included videos, and it was like, oh my gosh. So I did it and I was hooked. I was like, oh my gosh, yes, it was a lot of work, but it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it would be. So once I did that and the reception of it was great, I think it was within a couple weeks I came out with the first one, which was the sampler of circles. And I've just been going at it since then. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, that was very rewarding, trying something new and mm-hmm. having the success. And the that course, what? Tell me the name again. Circles.
Oh, Sampler of Circles. Yeah.
And that's watercolor, which
it
you
is
said
watercolor.
You're really into.
Yeah. And the kind of theme behind that class, it's not just about creating a grid of pretty circles, which is what you end up with. For me, it's really about helping people try out the process of practicing something, you know, without it being tedious or, you know, something they have to do for days or weeks or months or that whatever is it, that 60 days to form
right.
habit thing, you know, not anything like that. But just to see that, you know, so many people say they can't paint a straight line or they can't do, you know, small details. And so when you're working in a sampler, that's what it's for. It's for practicing. And yet you end up with something that's not just, you know, scribble in your sketchbook. It's you have a piece of art. So by repetition, by repeating the same simple, but maybe pushing you a little bit techniques over and over and over, you discover that, yes, if I really keep doing this, that yes, I could absolutely be a person that paints straight lines.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of had that experience when I would do swaps with other artists, and they'd pick a theme and they'd say, okay, we're going to do a Valentine's swap for jewelry charms. So you had to come up with something with that theme. And if there were 25 people in the group, you had to make 25 of them. And I would use it as an opportunity to try a new technique.
Exactly.
And so by the 25th, I was pretty good at the technique.
Yeah, didn't that sort of surprise you? You're like, man, yeah, I like have this down now, right? And it's just because, and it was only 25. It wasn't, you know,
right.
that many. But
yeah.
because you did it focused, you know, over and over again, your body learned how to do it. And I think just
right.
people don't always realize that, you know, it really doesn't take doing it that often to show yourself that you actually can do it.
Yeah,
and those challenges too, those like 100-day challenges are awesome for that. You know, the 100 days of whatever. I've done a couple of those too, and those are fantastic for that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And they're fun. And you know, it's no big deal if you miss a day. And I think some people get, a little nervous with that, but
the commitment.
You know, there's no challenge police that's going to knock on your door.
There's no challenge police. Yeah, it's really common for people to get caught up on a bunch at one time, you know. There's no hard rules. Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Do you have a plan for how often you want to offer new courses? Like these, I'm sorry, I keep messing up on the name, the circles.
Sampler of circles.
I'm so sorry. Sampler of circles.
I always have to think about it too. I kept wanting to call it circle sampler, or so it's not just maybe I picked a bad title. I should know better. But anyway, you know, I don't have a definite plan, but my goal is I would really like to have a good library of them, within the next year. So I want to be able to bundle them. You know, and I like keeping them small and simple because I want them to be, I don't want people to have to think too hard about, whether they want to try it or not. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know in the world of online courses, you know, the definition can just vary greatly. And an online course can be a 4 or 6 week class that you're committed to, but you've made this a small course. You've made it an affordable price. Mm-hmm. So it's very different. And people need to realize that not all online courses are formatted the same way.
That's
and
right.
You've made this. Yeah. This is just a little thing to try.
I try and think of it in terms of what can I videotape and, you know, and sort of finish within a week. Like if it's going to take me longer than that, preferably even less. It's probably not quite in the right category that I want. It may be better suited for a book or a larger course or something. I do have a larger course that's called Discover the Book Within You. And it's about helping people distill their ideas and figure out, you know, of all their ideas, or maybe they hardly have any ideas. They just know they want to do a book. It's helping them come up with a topic, you know, it's to be excited about. And that is it's more like a 4 to 8 week course, depending on how I run it.
Is that offered on your website?
It's not right now. It's a open, closed enrollment sort of thing that I've been offering a couple times a year. So.
Oh, I gotcha.
I'm actually in the middle of it right now, and I'll be probably offering it again in the wintertime. Or I'm debating, I might actually turn it into a book instead and just have it that way. It's got a lot of potential, so I'm kind of just playing around with it still.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's not on your website because you've
right.
already offered it and gotten the students for it. I gotcha.
Exactly.
I just wanted to mention one more thing. You offer another item on your website, and it's called a website review. I think a lot of people can use that. So, what does that give people when you do a website review?
So it's kind of a two-part thing. So for one, it's just seeing kind of how well your writing art is. If you have a lot of, mistakes, or, you know, if I have suggestions for ways that it could be written the same, you know, the same content, just written a little bit better. But
okay.
Also what I think is really helpful, is that I help people. Sometimes people just don't know how to express themselves on their website. You know, we're all so multifaceted, and it can be really hard, you know, when you're just thinking about on your own, what do I have to share that other people will care about? You know, do they care that I like dogs? You know, do they want to know that I love travel? Do they not care about any of that, and they just want to know about the type of art I make? You know, it can be overwhelming, to decide how many pages you need and all that. So just because I'm very good at organizing the content, you know, I can give them some tips on maybe they need more or fewer pages, and really help them make sure that their voice is in there, that they're really expressing the things that they want people to know, even if they're a little afraid of those being the things to share. I can help kind of, you know, encourage them and validate that, you know, what probably is a really good idea to share and to have up there.
Oh, okay.
Does
that
make
like
sense?
That.
It's kind of a vague.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, it makes sense because you did that to a degree when you worked for Northlight Books. Mm-hmm. When you're talking to somebody about their book and the style or the design, you want their personality to come through. And that's what you're trying to figure out. And you want the same thing to happen with their website, that the
right.
personality comes through. It's not just looking at paintings or mixed media that somebody does. You know, I think most people, they would like to sell their art. But today, people want to have a relationship with the artist before they make a decision on buying.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They want to feel that they know that artist. And that's what they're getting from looking at their website and looking at all their social media.
Exactly.
So I think Yeah, I think that's very important.
Yeah, a lot of artists, you know, just if they're just looking for, say, gallery representation or something like that, you know, they'll have their formal, you know, resume up there of all the awards they've won and right. stuff like that. But I mean, most of us don't care about that. You know, we're bored to tears when we see somebody's, you know, long list of accolades and awards. We want to know what they were thinking about, you know, when they were creating their art. So even if it's important for some reasons, and sometimes it is important to have all that on there, you know, I want people to understand more, you know, the spirit and the personality behind the art. And it doesn't just mean, you know, I've been creating since I was a little girl, because I can tell you that that's way more common than not. And again, that's right. another thing that we just don't honestly care about, because, well, we kind of maybe even assume as much, you know, so I can help them kind of take information like that and make it much more interesting and authentic. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we've certainly covered a lot here. Is there anything else that we've missed that you want to talk about?
I don't think so.
Okay. No, we've actually covered a lot. Huh. I'm looking at my questions here. So if somebody came to you and they said, you know, I really need to establish my brand more. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to establish your brand and have a brand?
It probably, at least in part, means some coaching calls. So it's really talking with the person to kind of help them get clear on that. It's me asking them the right questions to bring that about. And then, of course, part of that is, like you mentioned before, the website review. There's a variety of things, you know, and I typically charge by the hour, and I'm always happy to give people an upfront estimate of how much time I imagine it would take to do what it is they want to do. I give them options of, you know, for all the way from like get the why of you kit, you know, to invest in some coaching calls or some copywriting, or people have options. So, but the easiest way to figure that out is to at least have one initial conversation with them.
That's great. Please tell me the name of your website so people can find you.
It's tanyajenny.com, and that's TONIAJENNY.com. And Jenny really is my last name. I'm married into it. It's not like a middle name and I hide my last name or anything. That's my full name. So tanyajenny.com.
All right. All right. So everything that we've talked about will be on that website. So all talking about coaching, website review, your online art classes, everything is there. So I'll put links to that on the show notes on my website when I post this interview.
Thank you.
Yeah. But this has been so wonderful, Tanya. Thank you so much.
It's been a lot of fun. Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
You've definitely, you've seen the beginnings of the mixed media world, and I think you were really at the forefront getting the word out there that there is a mixed media world.
Yep.
Yeah, so thank you for that.
Absolutely, my pleasure. It's been a really fun journey. Yeah, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yeah, that's great. All right, thank you. You have a good day.
Thank you, you too.
So what do you think? Do you think you could write a book? Well, of course you can. If you have someone like Tanya Jenny guiding you. If you're like me, you probably didn't realize how far advanced self-publishing is and that it's a great option for creating a book. As she said, whether you are self-publishing or using a publisher, they both have strong pros for doing so. And I love her story about how she created an online class for 21 Secrets. Someone dropped out and they needed a replacement fast. How many times has that happened in some form or another? And given the artist a whole new branch of their business. You just have to be brave enough to say, yes, I can do that. And you may find that it takes you in a new direction that you love. Here are some great takeaways from this episode. Number one, if you are applying for a creative job, make a creative resume. It's in your best interest to show them your best self. Number two, don't be afraid to propose something new and unusual to your team, like Tanya did when proposing the first mixed media art book. She has a knack of spotting trends, and you'll be able to do the same in your area of expertise. Number three, there are many reasons to write a book, and they're not always just to make money. A book can be used as a sort of calling card to show potential customers and partners what you do. Number four, when working with a publisher, plan on at least a year between when you sign the contract and when your book should be completed. Number five, when writing a query letter for a book, you don't need to have the book written. You don't even need to have all the chapter headings ready. That's what will be worked on with your editor. Number six, when using a publisher, they will pay for the cost of publishing your book. Number seven, when self-publishing, you'll pay for the cost of publishing. However, you won't have to pay up front if it is a print-on-demand book. Number eight, when self-publishing, you'll have more freedom in choosing your book's title and design. Number nine, for self-publishing, you will have to pay for an editor for your book. Number 10, publishers will have distribution channels to independent booksellers. Number 11, whether using a publisher or doing it yourself, you will still have to promote your own book. And number 12, online art courses can be any length and any price. Find the one that is right for you. Be sure to check out my show notes for this episode on my website at SuzanneRedmond.com. I've got links to Tanya's website and many other things that we discussed. In my next business episode, I'll be talking about a lot of the art books that I own. So if you're looking for examples of successful books, or you'd like some art business resources, be sure to give it a listen. Thank you to Tanya Jenny for being so generous and sharing her knowledge of book editing, design, and publishing. You can see everything that Tanya offers to artists on her website at tanyajenny.com. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please go on to iTunes and leave me a review. And thank you for listening to The Left Brain Artist. I'm Suzanne Redmond. See you next time.